even busting my butt through the weekend. By the time I get home, it's not an act of sanity. Between the dogs, my mama's calls, is it against the law for me to get what I need? A good friend and a pledge of mine, someone to say it's gonna be alright. A good friend and a pledge of mine, a little pick me up to get me through the night.
And welcome to Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. We are broadcasting on the Right Stream, Network. I am one of your hosts, Lisa Tarvis. My other two co-hosts are not available tonight, so will not be here with me, unfortunately. And I'm very lonely, but I'll have to get through it. They both have other projects that they're working on, and my daughter Kirsten, who's one of our co-hosts, has had to work. And that's what happens when you're 19. Sometimes you just have to go to work. And my other co-host, Daria DiGiovanni, which I'm sure you all know from her show, Right Stream Tuesday, is finishing a project that she's working on with another author. So we've got a great show, though, tonight, and I'm really excited about it. Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss is the newest show that the Right Stream Network has released. We had our first show, I believe it was November 29th. And we're focusing on women, women's topics, women's issues. And tonight we're going to be talking with a lady that I think has done it all. And I'm really excited about her being on tonight. When I read her bio, you'll understand what I mean. She's done a lot, and she's fascinating. And I'm excited to introduce her tonight. Just a quick summary of what's going on the Right Stream Network. We have Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss on every Friday at 7 p.m. We have on Sundays, then my other show, my other show is Just Believe, which is a spiritual show. It's a show on spirituality and metaphysics and things of that sort. That airs every Sunday at 7 p.m. We have different holistic experts, paranormal experts, metaphysical experts, just a lot of different people on that show. And we have Military Monday on Mondays, Rate Stream Tuesdays with Daria Ann on Tuesdays, Wednesdays Family Power Hour, where we have a family law attorney and a family psychologist that host a show called Family Power Hour on Wednesdays. And then we're back to Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss on Friday. So we have another show coming up real soon, a technical show. Not sure what day we're going to air it on. It's going to hopefully be out here in the next couple of months. We're going to have details about that for everybody. So anyway, for now, again, my name is Lisa Tarvis, and you can check me out at lisatarvis.com. That's LisaTarves.com. You'll find links to my Facebook pages, Twitter account, LinkedIn, and everywhere else, and where you can buy my book, which is called Just Believe. Again, it's under the spirituality umbrella. So without wasting any more time, because I can't wait to talk to our guest tonight, her name is Barbara Levinson, and Barbara has lived in Miami for the past 38 years. A cum laude graduate of the University of Miami School of Law, Barbara has served as a prosecutor and run her own law practice where she focused on criminal defense and civil rights litigation. Barbara was elected to a judgeship in the Circuit Court of Miami-Dade County, where she served for 12 years and as a senior judge for 6 years. Born in Mount Vernon, Ohio, Barbara was raised in Columbus, Ohio. She was the first woman elected to the Columbus, Ohio Board of Education and later served as the board's first female president. She was the first woman to receive the Ohio Newspaper Man of the Year Award. Barbara and her husband, a retired financial consultant, bred and showed German Shepherd dogs for 20 years and finished 11 champions in the show ring. They have two sons, both of whom are lawyers. Outrageous October, which was just released, is the third mystery novel in the Mary Magruder Katz, and I got to make sure I pronounce that right, Katz, I think about it, mystery series. Whose protagonist is a Miami defense attorney. The first two books, Fatal February and Justice in June, have developed a large and diverse audience who have fallen in love with Mary and her hot Latin lover, Carlos. Everybody wants one of those. Anyway, the Library Journal called Fatal February a fun debut full of humor and joie de vivre. Thank you, Barbara. The Rocky Mountains News in its final edition said this book has all the right components: romance, suspense, real legal issues, a little violence, and some laughs. Justice in June has received over 50 reviews, including Publishers Week. Is that Deseret News?
Yeah, it's a. Yeah, Deseret News from Salt Lake City.
Okay. The Concord Monitor and even the Florida Bar Journal and the German Shepherd Review. How about that? She has spoken at numerous writers' conferences and book festivals, including Miami's own International Book Fair, International Thriller Writers, where she was selected as a debut author, Ohioan, right? Ohio Anna Book Festival and the Jewish Book Festival of Columbus, Ohio. In 2012, Barbara received the John Cosgrove Award for a lifetime of public service to the Miami-Dade County, Florida. When Barbara is not busy, writing or playing with her dog, she can be found at a Florida Panthers hockey game or at a University of Miami basketball game. She and her husband have been longtime supporters of women's basketball. Wow, that is some bio, Barbara.
That was a little long. Sorry about
that.
No,
that's all right. Actually, it's
when you get to be my age, the bio becomes long.
You know, it's so funny because I was thinking about that about my own resume. I was just updating my resume just, you know, for no reason really, except, you know, it's not that I'm trying to do anything different. I just like to keep it updated. And I updated. I'm like, this is getting ridiculous. When you get beyond two pages, this is just, I mean, you got to, like, narrow it down here. And I think that's right.
I'm really happy to be with you today and to talk about women's issues with you.
I really appreciate your being on. I mean, obviously you have done so much. I mean, just law school alone is quite an accomplishment to be able to get through that. Not to mention, you know, graduating as high as you did. That's fascinating. Then to be able to, I mean, then to be a prosecutor and a, you know, and then a judge, and then, I mean, it just, it's amazing to see everything that you've done.
Well, I think all those things really came about because people told me, no, they can't be done. And that just made me angry, and I had to go and prove that they were wrong.
I like that. I like that. It's kind of how I work, too. I do the same
thing.
When
I decided to go to law school, which is something I had really wanted to do for a long time, I wanted to do it originally when I went to college, but my college advisor said, oh, no, my dear, women don't become lawyers. Why don't you think about teaching or nursing?
Of course,
so I didn't go to law school then. I was a journalism major. And then after I was married and had two children and we moved to Miami, my husband said, you know, you always talk about going to law school, and here we are living 10 minutes from the University of Miami. Why don't you see if you can do it? And so, of course, my friend said, that's ridiculous. Why would you do this now? You have two kids. You have a husband. And my own mother said, oh, I don't think you should do that. It will ruin your marriage.
Oh,
and I was saying, but my husband wants me to go.
Yeah. It's his idea.
I think that's one of the keys, is being married or having a life partner who encourages you and whom you encourage to
right.
do the things they really want to do.
Right.
So I did go to law school, and then when I finished law school, everyone said, well, you'll never get a job. Who's going to hire somebody older? And, of course, I did get a job, and I got a very good job as a prosecutor. And at the time, Janet Reno was our state attorney in Miami-Dade County.
Okay.
And she was all four women doing whatever they could do. And so I moved up quickly in that office and had a wonderful time. It was the early 80s when we were trying all of the giant drug cases. So the prosecutors were, of course, pitted against very good national attorneys in these large drug cases. And I learned under fire. I really learned how to try a case. And then after a few years of that, I decided it would be fun to open my own law office. And so, again, everybody said, no, you can't do that. That's ridiculous. No one's going to hire you. Who's going to hire a woman to do criminal defense? And at the time, there were very few of us, but I did open my office, and I didn't starve, although the first 3 weeks, the phone never rang, so I was a little nervous.
Right. Yeah, of course.
And after doing that for several years and really doing a lot of traveling, because there were cases in a lot of places in the country, and my husband said, you ought to think about a judgeship. Why don't you run to be a judge? And I thought about that, and I really wasn't too keen on it. I was having fun with my law office, but after a couple of more years, I said, maybe that would be a good thing, because then I could stop traveling. I could just go to work every day and come home.
Right.
So we decided, yes, I would have a campaign to do that. And again, everybody said to me, oh, my God, you're going to run against an incumbent, and there are hardly any women on the bench. I think there were four at the time. And that's just not going to fly. So, of course, I had to show them that it was going to fly, and I ran against an incumbent who had sort of served his time already and needed to move on, but hadn't realized it. And a third person got into the race. So now we were in a three-way race. And the night of the election, which happened 1 week after Hurricane Andrew took out South Dade County, which is where I live, my husband turned to me and said, boy, I hope you win, because we sure can't raise any more money if there's a runoff. And I was a little nervous, but I did win. And I was on the bench then for a dozen years. And when I went on the bench, as I said, there were very few women. But when I retired from the bench, almost 50% of the bench in Miami-Dade County are women.
Wow.
So things changed a lot.
That's amazing. That's so amazing. I mean, it's just, you know, and I want to just add that you, all the stuff you're accomplishing while you are married, and so, you know, that makes you obviously a wife with the responsibilities that come with that, and a mother of two boys.
Right.
That's a lot. That's a lot for one person to handle, and you seem to have done it, and certainly not made it, I don't know. I guess I want to say you made it look easy, and I'm sure it certainly wasn't easy. And there are, you know, there were times that it probably drove you, you know, you kind of went crazy, I'm sure. But
oh, yeah. I mean, there were, obviously, there were days when I closed the door and cried.
Right. Yeah.
but I lived through it, and I'm glad for every bit of everything I did, because it was all fun and interesting. And, you know, when I went back to school, that was a good thing for my kids, because they saw that I had to work hard and study all the time, and they understood that that's how you get ahead.
Right.
So it was a good lesson without having to ever tell them that. They could see it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think it teaches our children, you know, where we live in a place where it's like everything's immediate. My daughter, I watch her, she's 19, and she's like a whirlwind. And it's like, you know, working and going to college and, you know, just, I sit there, I'm like, if I had to live her life for one day, I'd have to be hospitalized for like a week, because
I think it is all getting worse, because
yeah.
I have grandchildren now who are teenagers, and their lives are so hefty.
Yeah.
There's so much pressure on each age group now, and I think even more so than when I grew up or when my sons grew up.
Right.
One of your
mottos has been never take no for an answer. What happened?
That's right.
What happened in your life that made you, you know, how was that created? What happened in your life that created that motto?
Oh, I think it started when I was a kid, really. And when it was time for me to think about going to college, my father, who I adored, was a very nice man, but very behind the times, said, you know, I think you'd be a really good executive secretary. And I was livid. And I think things like that, people saying things like that, along the way made me just so stubborn that isn't what women were cut out to be. They're cut out to be anything and everything.
Right.
And we're proving that every day. I think the really good thing today that I see is that there don't have to be any more, I'm the first woman to do this or the first woman to do that, because there are 50 women ahead of you or 150 women who've done the same thing. And this is a good thing, and I think young women today know that they can do whatever they really want to do.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's changed. That's changed a lot. I mean, even since I was, you know, I was a kid. I remember my mom talking about when I graduated, or I was about to graduate high school, saying I should go to finishing school. And I remember thinking, what the hell is finishing school? I didn't even know what it was, you know. And I'm like, finishing school, you know, and it was
this isn't the finish, this is just the beginning.
I know, I'm like, what does that mean? Oh, it was bizarre, but, you know, I mean, it's just so funny how generation to generation things are changing, and I watch my kids, my teenagers, I have three teenagers, and they're like, I feel like they're managing so much more than I had to manage, and I don't know how they do it. But I think that some people, you're an example of this, is, you know, have just kind of laid out the work for it. I mean, really, you know, started showing long ago that you know, not that women can do anything they want to do. How did you go about winning that first election? No woman had even run before when you went into the
really
election.
Interesting. It was one morning we were sitting at the breakfast table in Columbus, Ohio, and I was reading the morning newspaper, and it said that there were seven men who were running for the seven seats on the Columbus, Ohio Board of Education, and they were all incumbents, and no one was running against them, and so they would just be going right back into their seats. And I said to my husband, my God, these people don't know a thing about schools. Their kids aren't in school. They're old men. Of course, they were probably younger than I am now, but they seemed very old to me.
Yeah, right.
And I had two little kids who were going to go to school. And so I said, I'm just the kind of person who ought to be on the school board,
right,
but I don't know if I can run. And my husband said, well, why can't you? I said, I don't know. So I had to go find out what I had to do, and we had to get 1,500 signatures on a petition to get on the ballot. And so we took the kids and we dressed them up, and we went to grocery stores and shopping centers and up and down neighborhoods getting signatures. And we did, and I got on the ballot. And then I went to every meeting of everything. If there were seven people in a church basement, I was there giving a talk. I mean, I just went everywhere and campaigned. And I think the turning point in the whole election was when I went to the firefighters union. And I walked into this union hall smelling of beer and cigarettes and cigar smoke. And there were, imagine a room full of firefighters, big, hefty guys. And I started my little talk, and my motto was, who knows more about children than mothers?
Ooh,
and
nice.
Immediately, one guy raises his hand and he says, wait a minute, who's going to take care of your kids in your home while you're out doing your school board thing? So I said, well, you know, this is a modern era, and you go off to work, and by 9 o'clock in the morning, your kids are in school. Your wife has a dishwasher and a washing machine and all kinds of modern things. And by 9 o'clock in the morning, she's ready to leave the house. Everything's done. And when she's finished with her work, she comes home when the kids do. So you don't know what she's doing all day, but it's probably nothing.
Oh, my God.
They laughed and cheered and applauded endorsed me.
That's awesome. What a great story. What a great story. And now somehow you came full circuit with that. I mean, with everything you did then, and we haven't really covered how you've done things necessarily, chronologically here, but you've accomplished all of these different things, gone to law school later in life, become a lawyer. Been a prosecutor, been a judge, been on the school board, all those different things, and now you write mystery novels.
Yeah, this is my retirement. when I actually retired, I had always wanted to write, and right before I went to law school, I had been doing some writing. I had written some short one-act plays, and I had gotten a university here who said they might like to produce them in their drama department, and I thought that was very exciting. But I had taken the LSATs and was accepted in law school, and I said, well, a writer or law school? Well, if I go to law school, I'm going to get a job with a salary. If I'm going to be a writer, I may never make a penny.
Right.
So I think I'm going to law school, and
right,
I just put the writing on hold, but I've always, always loved to write. And so when I was retired and I had the time, I started writing. And I went to, we have a literary arts center in downtown Miami, and it's part of our Miami-Dade college system. And I went to that and enjoyed it very much, and it sort of got me going writing again. And one of the professor who had taught me said, you know, there are three really good summer programs for writers, and you have to apply, and they'll probably want a manuscript. So I said, well, where are they? Well, one was in Iowa. And I said, oh, no way am I going to Iowa in July. The mosquitoes are probably big enough to carry me away. That's not where I'm going.
Right.
So he mentioned that one of them was Kenyon College in Central Ohio, and that was right 5 miles from where I was born. And I said, boy, that's sort of like a sign. And so he said, well, find out what you have to do to apply there, but don't be disappointed if they don't take you the first time. Sometimes it takes a couple of times to get to go. So I wrote and I put together a manuscript and sent it in, and I got accepted. So I went, and it's not a huge long program. It's 8 intensive days of writing with wonderful, wonderful teachers, all of whom are published authors themselves. And they only take 40 people. They take 10 in fiction and 10 in nonfiction, 10 in poetry, and there's one other category I can't remember. Anyway, I went to fiction, and you just do nothing but write. You are with this group of people from 8 in the morning when you have breakfast. You have classes all morning. You write in the lab all afternoon, and all, you have dinner together, and all evening you read to each other. And it's getting up in front of a group and reading what you have just written. And as many things as I had done, that was scary because, you know, it's like putting your baby out there and saying, is this a pretty baby or not? And so I got great experience, and I came back and really began to write. And I've always loved mystery, so I said, that's what I'll write. I will write what I like.
Right.
And this character, Mary Magruder Katz, is a typical Miamian, and she's the sort of the model of the women that I saw as young attorneys who appeared before me in court. And so she's a very mixed background. The reason of her name, the Magruders, her mother's family, were Southern Baptists who came to Miami to teach in one of the big churches, and her father's family owned Katz Kosher supermarkets. So she's got this diverse background, which loads of people in Miami do. It's a real melting pot place.
Right.
And, of course, she had to have a boyfriend who is her hot Latin lover, Carlos.
I love that.
Women just love. And he is half Argentine and half Cuban. And also very typical of Miami. And so my women readers who write to me always say, can I meet Carlos?
Yeah,
and I always write back and say, no, I saw him first.
I created
him. Of course, my husband always says, well, you know I'm the model for Carlos.
That's great. I love that. I love that. I love the idea of that. What was the first book?
The first book is Fatal February.
Okay.
And that's where we are introduced to Mary and her law practice. At the beginning, she is working in a high-tech law firm, very snooty, what we call a white shoe law firm in Miami, that she doesn't really like very much. But she's engaged to one of the partners, and then she meets Carlos when they have a fender bender. And it proceeds from there, where, of course, she's immediately taken with Carlos. And then we follow her law practice, and the main case there is a woman who is accused of killing her husband, who is a real runaround kind of guy who anyone would want to murder.
Yeah,
but,
right.
She does get her off, and we're never sure at the end whether she did or she didn't.
That's cool, yeah.
And then the second book is Justice in June, and we continue with Carlos and Mary, and they're now a real item. And there are several different mysteries in that one. One about a woman judge who is accused of fixing drug cases and hires Mary as her attorney. And there are two other clients as well in that book. And then the third book takes place in a little village in Vermont, and it's called Outrageous October. That's the latest book that came out this last spring. And it takes place in Vermont because now that my husband and I are both retired, we have a home in Queechy, Vermont that we go to in the summer and part of the fall. So people up there who've become our good friends have said, well, wait a minute, when do we get a book? So that's why I had to put one of the books as its venue, Vermont. And the story is that Mary catches Carlos with his ex-wife and is furious, gives back his humongous engagement ring, and takes a friend's offer of using her summer home in Vermont and runs away By the way, Mary has a German Shepherd. I guess everybody can guess that because I raised them for so long, and I still have one Shepherd. And all of the antics of Mary's dog, whose name is Uncle Sam, because she found him on her front lawn as a puppy on the 4th of July. And so she takes Sam and loads him up in her Ford Explorer, and off they go to Vermont. And, of course, as soon as she's there, she gets involved in murders and all kinds of interesting things.
Mm, that sounds awesome. Awesome.
And then the fourth book will be out this fall, and it's called Neurotic November. And all of them you can get as a book or as an e-book. And the first two books are audiobooks as well, and you can get all of them at Amazon.
Okay, so Amazon, and I'm sure everywhere books are sold.
Anyone can order them wherever you're
right at,
but the easiest way, honestly, is to get them from Amazon.
I say that all the time. I don't know how the heck Amazon does it. They're like little rock stars.
I don't know, but they deliver. Well, of course, you get your e-book in a second.
Right.
And you can get it on a Kindle. You can get it on your iPad, whatever. And that you get in seconds. And if you order the book, I found they get to me in the 2 to 3 days at the most.
I know. I have, like, Amazon Prime. You know, I pay for that extra service. Everything
yeah,
I order.
I get that, too.
Yeah, everything I order.
Like
2 days, boom,
yeah.
There. And I'm like, really? That is just, I'm so fascinated. Because so many books now are kind of like a print-on-demand situation because there's,
right.
You know, so much self-publishing and there's so much going on with books.
Which I think has been very, very good for publishing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah.
I've read some amazing books that have been self-published, and I think that it has been really good, and it's such an amazingly creative way to express yourself and tell the stories. And I think we're just able to, you're just able to experience so much now from so many different just average people. You know, you don't have to, you know, be a top
literary
author.
Genius.
Right, exactly, in order to put a book out there. And I think that's been a really good thing. I think that's really
good.
Well,
great. I do, too. And my first two books, it was kind of amazing. A publisher bought the first two books. I finished the first one, and I met an editor and the owner of a small publishing company that did only mysteries. I really went to a whole lot of seminars and writers' conferences to try to learn about publishing. And that's where I met these people, and they immediately, when they read the book, signed me. And I would really caution new writers not to jump into that. Take your time. And with the third book, I have published that through one of the Amazon publishers. And I find that's a really better way to go. Of course, everybody, you know, has to do it their own way. But I think that I had to really negotiate to get all the rights back to my first two books. And I wouldn't want to see anybody else have to go through that. And now I'm able to put them all out in paperback. And I'm going to, I'm in the process of, interviewing translators so that they can be printed in Spanish as well.
Oh, that's great.
And I couldn't do any of those things because I didn't own those rights. So
wow, okay.
I just caution any of your listeners that are new to writing and are thinking about publishing, take each step carefully.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, I never even thought about the fact that you would, you know, you wouldn't own your rights to do what you want to do with your own book, you know.
Yeah,
that's crazy. You know, you should be able to do that. But you know, it sounds like a really great series, and people love like mystery series too. I mean, I think that anything that's a series of books, especially under the crime or mystery genre, people really seem to really love that sort of thing. So it looks like you're going for quite a sweep here with all. How many more do you think you have in you?
I don't know. I'm going to have Neurotic November and Daring December, which I kind of have roughed out in my mind. As I always tell people, my best thoughts I get while I'm ironing.
Isn't that funny? It's like, that's how you meditate. That's what I tell people on who talk to me about meditation all the time. I'm like, you don't have to get into any funny position and blank your mind out. I said, the best, my mind is washing dishes. When I'm washing dishes.
There you go.
Yep.
You can do.
It's just when you get into that place.
While you're doing something.
Yep. So then you had the idea for a fifth one. And
so the next two, you know, Neurotic November is almost finished. And then I've got the good ideas for Daring December. And then we'll see from there. I also want to write some things that aren't in this, that aren't a series.
Right.
Some standalone books, and so I have a lot of ideas for that too. So I guess I'll be able to keep busy and stay out of the department stores.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's fun to. I mean, writing is, I think, so much fun, but it is so much work too. And I'm not sure, you know, if you haven't written a book, that you realize how much work really goes into, you know, the writing of a book. And, you know, just for all the listeners out there, by the way, you can find out all about not only Barbara and her books, but read her biography and all of that on her website at BarbaraLevenson.com. That's BarbaraLevenson.com. And on there, she's got right on the front page her three books that are already available and a link to purchase them, and then her bios under that. You know, and there's a lot of other information, including coming soon, you know, talking about the next book, and ways to contact, you know, Barbara as well. So that's her website, everyone. And you do have...
I love to hear from people, and so you can always reach me through my Facebook page. You can reach me through Barbara at BarbaraLevenson.com, and I promise you, I answer every email. So that's something, Lisa, when you were saying that writing is a lot of hard work, the writing to me is not as difficult as the promoting of the book.
Oh,
and that's
yeah.
what I really didn't understand.
Right.
Boy, does that take a lot of time.
Yeah, that is a lot of work. And when you're not with a large publisher, you're on your own there, you know? I mean, you're really...
Yeah, but you know something? Even the large publishers don't do a lot anymore.
No.
I have friends who have been writing for years, and they tell me that they get a little window of a couple of weeks of help, and then the promotion is theirs. And it's true that nobody can do it for you the way you can do it yourself.
Yeah, that's true. Nobody has the passion of, you know, about the book. Nobody knows the book like you do, you know.
That's
and
right.
Nobody has that passion for it. And your characters, I mean, when you write fiction, now I've never written fiction, although I do want to. I've never written anything fictional yet as an adult, like, and published it. I've written lots of fiction, but haven't actually published it. But, you know, writing...
Well, I am sure that you have good stories to share with people. And I always tell people, especially when I talk to groups in person or go to book clubs to talk, I could tap anybody on the shoulder and they would have a story to tell.
Oh, absolutely.
Everybody has something interesting.
Well, I mean, you just look back at, I mean, how many things can you pick out of your own past? I mean, your own life that you've lived so far. I mean, there's so many things. I could write 1,000 books out of stuff, and people would be like, "You really went through that? Oh my God!" You know, and it's just, and you're like, "Yeah, I actually did. How did I survive all that? And how you just, you know, you just power through. You do what you've got to do."
That's right. And it's kind of taking each day as it comes.
Right.
It's really interesting. Talking about younger women and whether they can have it all, there are so many books that have been written about having it all or what women should do. And when I look at this vast array of things to read, the how-to books, if women had the time to sit down and read those, they wouldn't need them.
Yeah, right.
It's just true that those are the things that women don't have time for, and the things that you put aside and say, well, someday I'm going to have more time to read, because you have to do what you have to do at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, so much of that is taking care of our families, and that's kind of what we do, I think, as women, and put ourselves, you know, second, which...
Yep, we do. I definitely do that. And you were saying something interesting right before we began the show about women who are perfectionists.
Mm-hmm.
And you really can't do everything perfectly. And that's the trade-off. I'm like, you know, I'm Mrs. Clean. I like my house to be sparkling. But there are times in your life where you just can't. There's something much more important.
I think it's to me it always seems like you have to choose between either focusing on one thing and being a perfectionist at it, or having a bunch of juggling, you know, like a bunch of balls in the air, and being pretty good at most of them. You know what I mean?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
I think you can't be perfect at everything.
No.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I've always felt like that was it, and that's something I think a lot of women have to kind of accept and decide for themselves what's more important. Would you rather be a multitasker doing a bunch of different things? Do you want the husband and the family and the car and the house and the career and all of that, you know, and the volunteer work and, you know, all the things that we all want to do, not to mention our hobbies and things like that? Or do you do you want to be pretty good at most of them, you know? Or do you want to focus on your career and just focus on your career? And then, you know what, maybe you can be perfect at that or nearly perfect at that, you know. But I don't think it's truly possible to have it all in the sense of doing it all perfectly. I think you can have it all and just lower your expectations for yourself a little bit, which sounds like you're talking down, and that's not at all what I mean. I don't want it to sound like I'm saying, you know, you can do everything half-ass or anything like that. I'm just,
no.
You know, I'm just...
I know. I think that you make some adjustments and alterations. I know a lot of young women attorneys who have put their career in a different mode while their children were very small. A lot of young women do appellate work, which means that they are writing the appellate brief, and then they go to court only to argue once in a while. If they have three or four appellate cases, they go before the Court of Appeals for a 10-minute argument. But
right.
The main part of their work is writing the appellate brief. And the appeal means that the trial is over, a person has lost, and they want to appeal that decision. And then they go to the next higher court. So that's a good thing that sometimes tides women over to keep their hand in their career without having to go to court to try a case or to be in court every single day to try to argue a motion, and they're running between two different courthouses. Then when their children are older and they're in school, they have time to do that, and they step it up again. I can give you an example of my own daughter-in-law, who is a journalist. And she was working full-time, and you know, it's a very demanding job. But when her children got to a certain age, she wanted to be the person to pick them up at school and take them to their activities. So she went to her editor and asked if she could work part-time. And she said, I understand I'll be giving up benefits, but I would like to do this. So the first editor she went to said no. So she went to the editor-in-chief, who said, yes, we will work it out. In fact, what we can do is combine two people doing one job, half a day each. And it worked out very well for her for the time that she needed to make that kind of adjustment. So I think women have to not be afraid to take a step back and then take maybe two steps forward, and do what you have to do at the time, depending on what else you have going on in your life.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's so true. And, you know, it's really great that, you know, in law, you have the option to dial it back a little bit and still stay fresh. Because, you know, there are so many people, like my career was in telecommunications back before I got into holistic health and became a metaphysician, and I have to tell you, it was like I couldn't, once I stopped that career, going back in, being in a technical field, pretty much impossible. I mean, very difficult to walk away from, spend a few years out of, and then go back into and not be really lost. You know,
Things are moving so fast in that area.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree. And I think that that's
the law changes a lot as time goes on too. But and I think there are ways for women to stay in practice without being in such high level practice.
Yeah, that's true. And to be with with a firm or something like that, instead of working, you know, in your own practice, which I would imagine you've done that, and that's got to be
that's got to
be hard.
7 days a week.
Yeah, that's not
something. I can tell you, I never had a weekend because first of all, you see new clients when they can come to see you, and if they're working, they can't come to see you, you know, until after 5 o'clock or on Saturday or Sunday.
Right.
And if you're preparing for trial, you're in the office with all your files open and you're preparing witnesses. And so it's a high level kind of thing.
I would think that would be a huge amount of work. I mean, you're kind of running your own business, which is hard enough, not to mention the type of business that it is. It's got to be mind blowing. Let's talk a little bit, because we've covered, you know, your career, and we've covered some of the things I want to talk about. But I also want to talk about something a little more light, a little more fun, and that's your German Shepherd puppy dog.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So tell me about, now that's pretty much been your hobby, right?
Yes, it's been a very big hobby. My husband and I both love dogs, and so we always had dogs for our kids. But we got into German Shepherds kind of backwards, I guess you'd say. Well, I had never been really fond of Shepherds. To me, they looked a little scary. But we had taken a vacation right after I passed the Florida bar. And before I started working as a prosecutor, we decided we were going to take 10 days, and we were going up to Maine, and we were going to just relax. So when we were driving from Boston up to Samoset, where we were going to stay, we passed this kennel, and it looked so beautiful. It was laid out on the hills with full white buildings, and it said home of the famous something or other dog, and we said, you know, if there's a rainy day or something, maybe we'll just drive back there and see what it is. So we did, and this famous dog was some Hungarian thing that this man who ran the kennel had just imported, but he said, that's not really what I do. I raise German Shepherds for search and rescue, for police departments, for protection, and we started looking at his puppies, and I just fell in love with them. They were just adorable, like little teddy bears.
Yeah.
And so he said, well, are you interested? And we said, yeah, I'd like one that looks just like this one. And so he said, well, I'm sorry, that one's sold, but if we have another litter with a puppy like that, we'll think about you. And a couple of months later, we got a postcard that says, have your dog send deposit. So we got our first Shepherd, and then we decided that we'd send her back up to this kennel to be trained for protection, because at that point I was working as a prosecutor, and one of our jobs was to go out at night with police officers to draw up search warrants. And so we were, you know, I would have to go out driving alone at night, 3 a.m. to a police station on the other end of town if it was my duty week.
Wow.
And so, yeah, it was very interesting. So we trained we had our Shepherd trained for protection for me in the car. And that little girl, she wouldn't let anybody near me. But then we had her have a litter of puppies, and one of the puppies, somebody said, it was just my special guy, someone said, well, he looks like a show dog. And we said, well, what's a show dog? So then we started studying this, and it's sort of been my practice to learn everything about whatever it is I'm going to do. So we were we were talking to people everywhere and reading books and looking at films, and we learned a lot about show dogs, and we bought our first show dog. And from there, we started breeding dogs and showing dogs, and it was unbelievable because many weekends we'd come home from work exhausted, pack the van, pack whichever dog was going to be shown, and drive to wherever the shows were, which could be any place,
right,
and show our dog and come back home and go to work again. And if it wasn't that, then it was delivering litters. And that really was something I had to fight the female dogs to grab the puppies out. They want to do it all themselves, but they don't make nice, clean cuts on the umbilical cord. So I would fight them to be the one to cut the cords. And then I would spend 24 hours on the kennel floor with the dogs because I want to make sure all the puppies were okay, they were all nursing, and the mother didn't accidentally crush them. And I'll tell you, we finally stopped breeding a few years ago because my knees gave out. I couldn't take it anymore.
Right.
But it was lots of fun, and my husband said, "This is so nice over the weekends. We meet all these new people." And I said, "No, we just have a new politics to get angry about, because there's a lot of politics in showing dogs."
Yeah.
But there is nothing more wonderful than these great, the brilliant dogs. When you come home and you're upset and you're tired, and one of your dogs comes and puts his head in your lap and looks at you like, "Oh, I know, everything will be fine," then you know it will be.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I've never had a German Shepherd. They do scare me a little bit, I'll be honest. I've had.
They look scary and they sound scary,
yeah.
But let me tell you, the males are wimps.
Really?
The females are pretty tough.
Yeah.
They're more protective, but the males will, they'll bark a bit, and then they'll slink off and do their own thing. So they really aren't scary. They're very, if they're trained right and if they're bred right. You have to breed for good temperament, which was what we did.
It's so funny. I have very good friends of mine that have Great Danes, and these freaking dogs are like ponies, right? And they scare the crap out of me, and they're the least vicious dogs. I mean, they're not guard dogs. There's nothing, you know.
They are the sweetest dogs.
Oh, my God, but they slobber all over me, and I'm like, ew. Like, seriously, I turn into, like, the biggest girly girl on the planet when I'm around these dogs. I'm like, "I'm sorry, I will only visit your house with a wetsuit on from now on," because it's so funny. They're just, I mean, they're such, I mean, the temperament on these dogs is just incredible, but
yeah.
They're just, I mean, their heads are, you know, like, as huge. I mean, their heads are so big. It just, I don't know. I mean, and that's what I think about German Shepherds. They have, a lot of them have big heads, and they have mean bark. They do. That's a ferocious little bark they have.
They have big voices.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Yeah.
But people don't understand that when they bark at the door, when someone comes to the door and they bark at you, a lot of times they're just greeting you. It's like they're saying, "Hello, come on in."
Yeah, I have two dogs, an Australian Shepherd. He's supposed to be a toy.
Oh, they're nice dogs.
Yeah, he's nuts. He's neurotic. He's crazy. Crazy, crazy, crazy. You talk about a guard dog. He's so confused. He doesn't know if he's actually was supposed to be a toy. He ended up being a miniature, and he's a real big dog, and for what he was supposed to be. And anybody that rings the doorbell, he comes to the door, he will bite them. He will like nip at them. And it's really bad. And then when they go to leave, he chases them out and tries to get them back in the house. So he's got that whole guard.
In other words, you can come in, but you're not going
to
leave.
Exactly. He's got this whole guard dog thing going on, and then he's got this herding thing where he wants to herd everybody back in. Okay, you know, no, you're not allowed to leave the herd. You got to get back in here. And then I have a Shih Tzu who will just lick you to death. You know, I mean, that's basically all he does. He'd go home with anybody that, you know, that came to the house. He's just like, "I love you. I love you. I want to play with you." You know, cute.
Well, I tell you, I heartily recommend dogs to keep your sanity, because they just, that's why they use dogs for therapy. And they take, you know, the dogs go to hospitals, they're wonderful with children. So I I highly recommend a good dog is a great thing to have, and we've had so much fun with these dogs.
Yeah.
Even when we were super tired with everything going on, it still sort of refreshed us to go and do something totally different.
Yeah, I bet. I love my dogs, and I can just imagine that. I've heard everybody I know that has a German Shepherd absolutely just thinks they are the best dogs, would never have a different kind of dog. I mean, it's,
that's how I
yeah.
am. I just love these dogs.
Yeah.
And now we're down to only one dog. We were down to our last of our own breeding. Everyone else was gone, had died. And she was beside herself because she'd never been without other dogs. And she thought all the other dogs were her puppies. So we knew we had to get another dog immediately, and we called a breeder that we felt was as good a breeder as we were, and she was going to bring a litter of puppies for us to see a couple of months after we spoke to her. In the interim, this is so interesting, my husband picked up the Miami Herald and saw a picture in the classified section of a German Shepherd in a shelter. And I couldn't believe there would be a full-blooded shepherd that looked like that in a shelter for homeless dogs.
Right.
So the next morning, we went there immediately, and there he was. He was emaciated.
Oh, my gosh.
And sickly, but you could see he was a gorgeous dog. And we got him out of there. We took him immediately. We said, yes, we're adopting him. That's it.
Yeah.
And we took him from there right to the vet, who found that he was sick. He had Lyme disease, and he was covered in ticks.
Oh, my God.
So they washed him and dipped him and did all that and got him on medication. We took him home, and we nursed him for 3 weeks. He had apparently never had any good nutrition. He has turned out to be the smartest, loveliest dog you can imagine.
Aww.
Trained up beautifully. I mean, he must know 100 words. I can be talking and say ball or walk in a sentence, and he picks that up immediately, gets up and alerts. He's just a super dog.
Oh, and that's
I
really
am
cool.
Very convinced that the best thing you can do is to save a dog out of a shelter.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I actually, my dad lives in Florida, and he has just he had two poodles. The one was a teacup, tiny. She lived to be, I think, 16 and 15, maybe 15, and just passed away, like, I would guess 6 months ago or something. And now he's got another one who's blind and deaf, and, you know, she's 16 now. And I'm like, Dad, you know, you got it. I'm like, would you just go to a shelter and pick out another dog? Because my mom had bought those dogs when she was alive. And I'm like, go pick out a manly dog, you know, because everybody makes fun of him for walking with two little white poodles around the neighborhood. But I'm like, just, you know, you want, he's like, I'm going to, he goes, I really want to rescue this time. I want to rescue one that's like maybe 3 years old, or he said, maybe
that's
even
right.
older, because I want to rescue an old dog like me.
I think he's got the right idea.
Yeah.
And especially as you're older,
yeah.
if he's by himself, you know, this is something he has to get up every morning
yeah.
for.
Yeah.
To feed that dog and walk the dog.
Yeah, it's something to live for. It's something that helps keep you young. And I told him, don't get a really old dog that's about to die, and then you got to go through that whole grieving process again, because losing a dog is
like
so hard.
Like 3 years old or 4 years old.
Yeah, that's what I said.
It isn't a puppy.
Yeah, you don't want to deal with the puppy stuff, because the puppy stuff is really just annoying. But that's a lot of work, but...
Well, Lisa, I have enjoyed talking
I've
to
enjoyed
you
it.
So much.
I've enjoyed it as well, and I really appreciate your being on the show. I will tell everybody about your books. I know you need to run. You've got a place to be, but I'll make sure I give your website out and when we close the show, and the name of your books and all of that again. So I appreciate you so much being on. Thank you, and I hope to talk to you again soon.
I hope so, too. Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks.
And I hope to hear from some of your listeners. And if you read the books, let me know how you like them. Of course, if you hate them, don't bother.
yeah, don't tell me that. I don't want to know. I don't want to know that. All right.
Thanks again, Lisa.
Thanks, Barbara.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. everyone. That was Barbara Levinson. She, well, we've heard about her story. I mean, she's amazing. Went to law school later in life, had two children, marriage, became a lawyer, became a judge. You know, now she's a mystery novel writer, which is amazing. And anyway, I'm always impressed by people that their stuff is, they've tried a little bit of everything. I just love that. And women that have had success in so many different fields. And you know, and for her at a time when, you know, women didn't have the opportunities that they have now career-wise. You know, they like she said, she was told to become an executive secretary or something, and instead of you know, wanting to go to law school. So that's a lot. But anyway, she's done amazing work in her lifetime, and she's still writing some amazing books. So everybody check her out at barbaralevinson.com. Again, that's B-A-R-B-A-R-A. Levinson is L-E-V-E-N-S-O-N.com. So it's barbaralevinson.com. And her books are Fatal February, Justice in June, and Outrageous October. And she's got another one coming out here pretty soon, Neurotic November, I believe it's going to be called. So definitely check her stuff out, buy her books, and let her know what you think. She, like she said, she responds to every email she gets, so that's pretty cool. That's great that she does that, because a lot of us don't do that. Not me, of course. I respond to everybody. No, I don't. I'm really not that great responding to everybody, but I try. Anyway, everybody, we're going to close the show here. Again, thank you all so much for listening to Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss. Every week we're on at 7 p.m. every Friday, and we are covering women's issues like love and relationships, marriage, fashion, skincare, makeup, health and wellness, all kinds of things. Next week, we're going to actually have just our three hosts. Hopefully all three of us will be available next Friday. And we're going to just talk about some different topics that are in the news and some different things that are being talked about regarding women and things that women are interested in. Check out all of our shows on the RightStream Radio Network. So you can find that at rightstreamradio.com. That's W-R-I-T-E, stream, S-T-R-E-A-M, radio, R-A-D-I-O.com. And you'll find out about all the shows the RightStream Radio Network offers and information on each one of the hosts, as well as information on how to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and all of those things from that website. So next up on RightStream Radio is me again on Sunday with Just Believe. So please tune in for that on Sunday. We'll be live at 7 p.m. And check my website out at lisatarvis.com. And for goodness sakes, buy my book. You can buy my book, Just Believe, at Amazon.com or anywhere books are sold, like we were just talking about with Barbara. Amazon seems to be amazing at it. So everybody, we all kind of recommend buy it from Amazon. They're so quick. So anyway, you can get it electronically, or you can get it, you can actually buy a hard copy of it. And if you have anybody has any interest in being on any of the RightStream shows, you can send me an email. My email address is lisa@lisatarvis.com. So for this week, this is the end of Love, Liberty, and Lip Gloss for this Friday, and I will talk to everyone next week. I really appreciate everybody listening to the show, and we'll talk to you on Sunday when you tune in for Just Believe. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.